Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Cooper Standard second quarter 2016 earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in listen-only mode. Following company-prepared comments, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, you will need to press the star, followed by the number one key. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded, and the webcast will be available for replay later today. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Roger Hendrickson, Director of Investor Relations.
Thanks, Dan, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to join our call today. We appreciate your continued interest in Cooper Standard. The members of our leadership team who will be speaking with you on the call this morning are Jeff Edwards, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and Matt Hart, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin, I need to remind you that this presentation contains forward-looking statements. While they are made based on current factual information and certain assumptions and plans that management currently believes to be reasonable, these statements do involve risk and uncertainties. For more information on forward-looking statements, we ask that you refer to slide 3 of this presentation and the company's statements included in periodic filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. With that said, I'll turn the call over to Jeff Edwards.
Okay, thanks, Roger, and good morning, everyone. We're pleased to again report record quarterly performance. The second quarter of 2016 marks the seventh consecutive reporting period in which we have delivered year-over-year improvement in adjusted EBITDA. We reached a record high of $879 million in sales for the quarter. Excluding the impact of foreign exchange rates and divestitures, sales were up more than 5% year-over-year. We continue to see strength in all of our key markets, and strong demand for light trucks and SUVs continue to drive a favorable mix. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $109 million, which was also a record high for our company, up nearly 12% compared to the second quarter of last year. The increase was driven by improved volume and mix, as well as our continued success in implementing the Cooper Standard operating system and best business practice tools in our facility around the world. As a percent of sales, adjusted EBITDA for the second quarter 2016 was 12.3%. That's up 100 basis points compared to the second quarter of last year. We also had an excellent quarter in terms of free cash flow with a $39 million improvement versus the second quarter of last year. Matt will provide more detail on this in a few minutes. We're certainly very proud of our employees around the world. They're the ones responsible for the record results. Their alignment to our strategy and dedication to our culture of innovation and operational excellence continue to drive our performance. And we'd like to thank each of them very much. As we move on to slide 6, this reflects our track record of outpacing industry growth. As mentioned on the prior page, we had a 5.2% growth in the second quarter, excluding the impact of FX and divestitures. Carrying that forward to the first half, with similar FX and M&A adjustments, we grew at 6.8%, or 2.4 times greater than the light vehicle production growth. This continued growth above market is consistent with what we have said you should expect. On slide 7, we compared our adjusted EBITDA results in the second quarter to the same period a year ago, and we break out some of the key drivers of our record performance. Volume and mix were favorable in the quarter, adding $16 million in adjusted EBITDA improvement year over year. Our manufacturing teams continue to drive improved efficiencies, adding $14 million in EBITDA compared to the second quarter of 2015. We remain on track with our plans to deliver $100 million in operating savings for the full year as we ramp up our best business practice tool in our fuel and brake delivery and fluid transfer system facilities. Turning to slide 8, as we have discussed, the Cooper Standard operating system provides our teams a playbook of systems and best business practices. It's the primary tool we use to drive our performance in all aspects of the business. This slide highlights some of the major operating measures and accomplishments in the second quarter. We're certainly proud to have received 5 major customer recognition awards in the quarter for product quality, service excellence, and new product launches. Also, we successfully launched 60 new programs in the quarter, while at the same time achieving $14 million in operating cost reductions, improving product quality by 81%, and improving employee safety by 26%. We also added $47 million of net new business during the quarter, bringing the total for the year to $214 million. Moving to slide 9, our culture of innovation continues to drive game-changing advancements, especially in material science, in creating value through differentiation in the market for Cooper Standard. To date, we have booked $142 million in annual sales of our new innovative products. $34 million of this was booked in the second quarter. Start of production on this business ranges from late 2016 to the first quarter of 2019. We've also added 2 more development contracts for Fortrex ceiling products, bringing the total to 6. We're pleased with the momentum that our innovations are gaining across the customer base. In addition to the contracts we have been awarded thus far, we have a larger number of pending open quotes and additional targeted quotes we expect to submit by the end of the year. We are optimistic that this will drive significant new business awards in the future. We also remain very excited about the pipeline of additional innovations that we have in development. We expect these to continue to drive incremental profit growth going forward. We continue to explore ways to accelerate this growth, including the possibility of introducing our material science in adjacent markets. So in summary, we're commercializing breakthrough innovation technology, growing the top line, expanding margins, and significantly driving improved cash flow. Let me now turn the call over to Matt.
Well, thanks, Jeff, and good morning, everyone. In the next few slides, I'll provide some additional color on our financial results for the quarter and then comment briefly on the evolution of our investor awareness efforts and our trading volume. On page 11, you see a summary of our results for both the second quarter and the first half of 2016 compared to the same periods in 2015. As Jeff mentioned, our second quarter 2016 sales of $879.3 million was another record high. Gross profit for the quarter was 19.6% of sales, up 170 basis points year over year and up 190 basis points year to date. Our adjusted EBITDA of $108.5 million for the quarter was also a record high. So at 12.3% of sales, this was an improvement of 100 basis points over last year and a 30 basis point sequential improvement over the first quarter of 2016. Our year-to-date adjusted EBITDA of 12.2% is up 150 basis points over the first half of 2015. Net income in the second quarter was $40.9 million, or $2.20 per diluted share. And when you exclude restructuring charges, the adjusted net income was $52.9 million, or $2.85 per diluted share, up 62 cents, or 28%. Our year-to-date adjusted EPS of $5.37 is up $1.51, or 39%, compared to the first half of 2015. Our CapEx for the quarter was $26.3 million, or 3% of sales. And for the first half of the year, the CapEx was 4.7% of sales, which is in line with our full year and longer-term plans. On slide 12, the chart on the left highlights how we're continuing a positive trend in our adjusted EBITDA margins. On a trailing 12-month basis, we've shown margin improvement in every quarter since the third quarter of 2014, which is essentially when we began the implementation phase of our current operating strategy. We're pleased with this improvement so far, and we believe that there is still more upside opportunity for us going forward. Free cash flow for the quarter improved $39.4 million compared to the second quarter of 2015. Our first half free cash flow generation is up more than $73 million compared to the same period last year. These improvements were driven by primarily improved operating income, timing of CapEx spend, and our continued focus on working capital improvements. Moving to slide 13, the combination of strong operating performance and focus on executing our cash generation strategies has continued to strengthen the balance sheet. We ended the second quarter with total liquidity of $463 million, with cash increasing to $340 million, or 66% higher than in the second quarter of 2015, in addition to the $123 million available on our undrawn revolver. As our business continues to perform, we have established a consistent level of liquidity quarter on quarter, which gives us flexibility and optionality to optimize our profitable growth strategy and our stakeholder interests. We have a moderate amount of debt outstanding with $774 million at relatively low interest rates and no significant maturities until 2021. And when considering our cash balance, we ended the second quarter with net debt of $434 million and a net debt ratio of only 1.1 times trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA. Moving to slide 14, our margin expansion and improved cash flow generation have not gone unnoticed by the credit rating agencies. During the second quarter, Moody's upgraded us to B1 with a stable outlook, and Standard & Poor's upgraded our outlook from stable to positive. The commentary from both agencies expresses confidence that we will sustain and improve our operating performance going forward, and this is consistent with our strategy and what we've been communicating to our current and potential stakeholders. Now moving to slide 15. As we transitioned into the execution phase of our strategy, and we've seen an improvement in our results, we've actively focused on increasing our visibility within the investment community, reaching out to both existing and potential shareholders to increase investor awareness. In addition to our own outreach effort, we're also pleased to have two additional analysts initiate coverage, increasing our total to six from zero just 3 years ago. With our improved operating performance, added research coverage, and proactive investor outreach efforts, we've seen a notable increase in the average trading volume. We believe this should help reduce investor concerns regarding trading liquidity. Now let me turn it back over to Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Matt. In the few minutes that we have left, I want to review our outlook and the guidance for 2016. So let's move to slide 17. As we discussed during our last call, we typically revise guidance once a year in conjunction with our second quarter results. And in view of our strong first half performance, which exceeded our plan, and given our positive outlook for the remainder of the year, we're increasing our full-year guidance for both sales and adjusted EBITDA margin. We now expect full-year sales to be in the range of $3.4 billion to $3.43 billion. That's an increase of $50 million on the low end and $30 million on the high end of the range. We're increasing our outlook for adjusted EBITDA margin to a range of 12 to 12.5%, consistent with our first half performance and the expectations that margins could improve slightly in the second half, given strong production volumes in our key regions. So this represents 120 to 170 basis point improvement compared to a full year 2015. We expect to see continued top line growth above the market, coupled with continued operational execution. So this concludes our prepared remarks. Now we would like to open the line for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, you may do so by pressing the pound key. And if you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before entering your request. One moment, please, as we assemble the queue for questions. Your first question comes from the line of John Murphy with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is now open.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, John.
Just a first question on slide seven. Jeff, you kind of alluded to $100 million of efficiencies and savings in full year 16. It looks like you got about $14 million in the second quarter. I was just wondering where you are year to date and what will really get you to that $100 million by the end of 2016, if I understand.
Yeah, thanks, John. I think, as I mentioned also, keep in mind, John, last year we had rolled out the best business practice tools across our sealing business, and we had generated that same number, around $100 million. This year, in addition to continuing with our sealing plants, we've now launched it in our fuel and brake delivery, and then later in the year in our fluid transfer system facility. So that will absolutely generate additional savings in the second half. And I think if you look at our numbers this year, $32 million year to date, that's very similar to where we were last year at the same time. So typically, as you build momentum going through the year, this is very much exactly as we did last year.
That's helpful. And then as we look at slide nine, interesting, the book business to date is relatively strong. Just curious, as you book business, I mean, how fast can it roll on? Because, I mean, you kind of alluded to it being late, that business rolling on from late 2016, the first quarter of 19, which is roughly over the next 2 years. So, as you're awarded business, can it roll on very quickly? I mean, just curious the sort of the book to launch timing.
Yeah, I think, John, what we've said in the past, and you're aware of this as well, unless we have a running change, so if we're fixing an issue that maybe our customer has with the competitor's product and they want to put ours in a mid-cycle, then we can do it sooner. That's why you would see some of them go in sooner rather than later. But typically, the period of time from when we win an order with our parts, that's 2 to 3 years before it launches. That's pretty normal for us.
Okay, and then as we look at the pending quotes of 1 to 110 and additional targeted quotes of 2 to 225, I mean, what is your typical win rate as you get into this quoting process?
Yeah, I think the good news is our Fortrex product, John, is really gaining momentum. We now have six pre-production orders there, and as you know, that's advanced engineering working with us on particular programs that ultimately we believe will be spec'd into. So we'll continue to say that we're working on 2018, 19, and in some cases 20 model years for all of that. So it's going very well. On the Magloy for fuel and brake, we've already booked one production order that'll launch 2 years from now, and we have others that are in the queue that we feel very strongly about. So I think it's best to think about it in the as far as significant ramp up of sales for us will be 2019-20 model years at the onset of this new technology. I think that's the best way to think about it.
Okay, and then just lastly, as we look at slide 12, the EBITDA margin progression is wildly impressive. Is there sort of an upper limit or a target that you guys are thinking about there? I mean, you exited the first half at 12.2%, which is even well above the LTM of 11.6. What are you thinking about as sort of the target there or the upper limit, even if you think about it that way, but really the target? And, how do you get there? I mean, is it a lot of efficiencies and the new business, or just trying to understand that?
Sorry, John, are you talking about this year or coming years?
I'm talking about sort of a long-term target. I mean, you have your outlook for this year, but, I mean, is there a target range? I mean, like I said, I mean, you're exiting the first half at 12.2, which is much higher than 11.6. I mean, is this the kind of number that could get to 13, 14, 15%? I'm just trying to understand where your head is at sort of as a long-term target.
I think we've given you guys some color around that. When we think about our margins here in North America, we think as we bring the innovation to market, we'll get paid for that. So that'll result in some increase in addition to the running of the business more effectively than we are. So we expect to continue to do well in North America. Europe, that we'll finish our restructuring there. So that 2018, that business will be in the low double digit from an EBITDA point of view. And we've talked to you about China with the acquisition we made there and teaming that with the Cooper business that was there. We expect that to be in the low to mid-teens going forward in the time period that you're referencing. So I don't have any issue talking about the margin expansion continuing into the to the low to mid-teens as we get out in these future years.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt Caranda with Roth Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the questions.
Morning.
I wanted to start off with the revenue outlook for 2016. So if I look at the midpoint of that guidance, it does imply that the second half could be down a touch sequentially versus the first.
Yes.
Maybe just wanted to see if you could comment on what you're seeing by region and just get a little more granular into what fed into that outlook.
Yeah, I think, Matt, you've probably seen some of the customers talking about second half. And so we've reflected not only our releases over the next couple months that are very firm, but we've also reflected some of the recent discussion about volumes in the second half. We certainly feel that that we're in good shape in China. We think about that in terms of the 25.2 million or so for that market. I think that'll be solid. North America, our numbers reflect the latest IHS sentiment there, right around 18 million. So that's down just a little bit. In Western Europe, we feel really good. So that's sort of how we think about it. But we're typically always down when you compare the second half of the year to the first half, but not significantly.
Got it. Okay. And then the six development contracts that you guys highlighted, just wanted to get a sense for sort of how long do you expect some of those development contracts to gestate before you start to see booked business on commercial programs?
Yeah, I mentioned to the previous questions on that, Matt. I think that we're looking certainly as we have these pre-production orders right now with advanced engineering. I mean, we're talking about 2019 model years, 2020 model year is when we have targeted for revenue to begin impacting our bottom line, at least in a measurable way.
Got it. Okay. A couple more. Wondering if you could just comment on the pricing environment you guys are seeing, whether it's on existing programs or incremental bookings. I mean, just in this environment where you did talk about, production environment kind of flattening out in certain regions, are some of your customers getting a little bit more aggressive, looking to get price downs, or is it kind of steady here?
I think the market itself hasn't changed in many years. I think there's different ways to answer that for each customer, Matt. But I would tell you that we aren't seeing anything different, as I said here today, versus at any point this year or last year. It continues to be a challenging market. We certainly have strong competitors. Our view on managing all of that is that, first of all, we have to continue to drive an operational excellence in Cooper Standard to take our costs down so that we can keep up with whatever pricing pressure exists, and so far we've been able to do that very well. And then I think our second strategy certainly is around innovation. If we can offer solutions to our customers that our competition can't, and there's value there for our customers, which is our responsibility, is to create that value for them. We think that will go a long way in helping us manage any pricing pressure, as you have alluded to there.
Got it. Okay, and then just one more, if I may, here. In Asia-Pacific, notice the operating margin just ticked down slightly sequentially. Is that just launch activity, plant ramp-up that's impacting that, and just maybe a little color around that?
Yeah, Matt, this is Matt. It's exactly that. There's two things. One is some incremental spend on SGA&E as we plan for future growth. Secondly is, on a year-over-year basis, incremental interest expense. And what you see unreported is segment profit. That includes D&A as well as interest expense. I mean, if you take a look at that from an EBITDA perspective, Asia is running close to 10%. On a quarter and year-to-date basis.
Got it. Very helpful, guys. I'll jump back in queue. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of David Kelly with Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question.
Morning, David.
Gross margin was up nicely in the quarter, even accounting for the price adjustments there. I was just wondering if you could talk about some of the drivers of that expansion and maybe the longer-term opportunity you see in gross margin.
Sure. So, David, as Jeff mentioned back on page 8, when you take a look at the net cost out that we are getting on an annualized basis, it's materializing quarterly. Year to date, we're at $32 million in the second quarter alone. We're at 14. So the net cost out operations are helping us. The other thing that's giving us a lift is the mix of product that we're selling with the incremental volumes on trucks and SUVs. That for sure is helping mix up our gross margin as well on a year-on-year basis.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then another quick follow-up to the truck and SUV comments. I was just curious to your thoughts on U.S. regulators shelving the 54 mile per gallon fuel economy target. And given your exposures to light trucks and SUVs, how do you think this plays out or maybe alters production mix and maybe your prospects over the next several years?
Again, I think we continue to talk about trucks and SUVs in the mix that we're seeing today. Our view is that will continue to be very strong. We don't see anything in terms of what our customers are talking to us about that would suggest that's going to change anytime soon. So we feel very good about that.
Okay, great. And then one final one from me, and I'll pass it along. Just a quick follow-up on Fortrex. I think you mentioned last quarter the four contracts were split evenly between North American and European OEMs. Just wondering if maybe you could provide us with a similar breakout of the two incremental contracts.
It's now 3-3.
Perfect. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before entering your request. Your next question comes from the line of Pat Archambault with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Congrats. I wanted to just follow up on one of the margin questions. I guess on slide 7 in your profit walk, you've got $16 million contribution year on year from volume mix. There isn't a comparable revenue walk that I can see, but if you just take that on the back of the change in revenue, right, which is about $18 million, it's obviously very, very high conversion. And so wanted to see if I was thinking about that right. I guess you did mention mix, but maybe just a little bit more on that number would be helpful.
So Pat, this is Matt. When you think about it, FX negatively impacted us in the second quarter, as well as the impact of the divestitures of our Rockford business and the tail of our thermal and emissions business. So when you think about revenue alone, we talked about a 5.1% increase in revenue on an organic basis that would have driven the $16 million.
Got it. So it's 5%. So I guess, if we look at that, that's more like a, round numbers, kind of like a $45 million increase. It's still a very nice, kind of 30%+, contribution,
yep.
Right? So I suppose the divestiture would sort of, you'd have to take that out. But that's really kind of just the mix impact, right, that is kind of reflecting in that. Is that kind of it?
Yeah, if you think of volume by itself, that number looks like it wants to be in the sort of the 55-ish million dollar range. When you take out price, FX, and the impact of the divestitures, that's 16. It would equate more to a 55 or so million dollar volume change.
Got it. Okay. No, that's helpful. And then the other one that I wanted to follow up on is just China. I think you were up 4% year on year, which is decent, but. The market is up also a decent amount in terms of production. in the quarter, and you know, you guys have a lot of these new contracts rolling on. So how do we think about the acceleration of that and the timing of that?
That's a good question. And when you think about as we report from a segment perspective, Asia Pacific, that includes our sales in India, Korea, the rest of Southeast Asia, as well as China. We are seeing growth above market in China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's offset a little bit with the growth rates that we're seeing in the other countries that we sell in Asia Pacific.
And just to get like more firm grounding, out of the new programs that you are, you know, quoting on and winning, you know, can you just maybe loosely describe where we are in that ramp period? I mean, has that roll-on process, are we already, you know, decently in the thick of that, or is most of that to come?
Yeah, I think in China, Pat, this is Jeff, I think we are certainly right on what we told you we were going to do in China. We think by the beginning of the next decade, we will have $1 billion of business in China. We started in 2000, the end of 2012, we had $200 million. This past year, we hit the $400 million number. End of next year, that number will be, we'll have a six in front of it. We're well on our way to the target that we described. We'll add our 11th plant in China this year for fuel and brake vertical integration. Keep in mind that that we're operating there at about 50 or 60% of our capacity across all those plants. So the good news is as we go from this $500 million in sales number that I talked about to the $1 billion number that I talked about, there's not a whole lot of need for more brick and mortar. So we feel really good about the trajectory we're on as well as the capacity that we have put in place to manufacture the business that we're winning. The second point I would make is that we're also getting a lot of pull for our technology. So not only with the traditional Western automakers that have joint ventured there with the Chinese automakers, they're certainly interested in the technology, but we're making some pretty quick inroads as well with some of the winning domestic Chinese automakers as well. So the growth is really extremely strong. The challenge that we have is to continue to get it launched in a pristine way so that we manage our cost and our quality and the overall performance. That's always the big challenge in a market like that with a growth rate that we have.
Got it. That's helpful color. All right. Well, thanks.
Hey, Pat, one other comment I guess I failed to mention is regarding foreign exchange. With the change in the yuan, both in the second quarter and in year to date, that does have a dampening impact on our top line growth.
Interesting. I mean, I don't. We can follow up offline if you don't have it at your fingertips, but be curious to see what that represents.
It's about 5%.
Interesting. Okay, got it. Terrific, guys. Well, congrats on the quarter, and thanks for all the additional color.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Your next question comes from the line of Brett Hoselton with KeyBank. Your line is now open.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Brett.
I wanted to take a step back, kind of 30,000-foot perspective. You've got a very solid self-help story from a margin perspective. You've been doing a great job in improving margins, and we're going to see some continued improvement there. However, as I look longer term, I think you've got kind of a second wave coming through in terms of new product development driving top-line growth. And I wanted to ask you, can you talk a little bit about some of the new products that you're developing, and how do you think those are potentially going to help you drive top-line growth longer term? And as we think about it from an investment community and kind of modeling it longer term, when does that actually start to drive revenue growth for your company? In other words, is it a 2, 3, 4, 5-year process? How do you think about that?
Yeah, Brett, this is Jeff. So I think, as I mentioned, for our sealing business, the new material science that we've developed that we've branded Fortrex, That will provide the ceiling side of the company a tremendous opportunity, we think, to grow. When we look at how we think or why we think that will happen, we ultimately is going to save our customers 30% to 40% in weight savings over the product that it replaces, the EPDM product that it'll replace. It also has a performance science associated with it that allows it to basically look showroom new for its entire life. And if you look at most EPDM products that are in the market, and as it gets exposed to the different climates around the world, it tends to fade and crack and age over time, and our product does not. So those are just a few of the reasons why our customers are so excited about it. And as I mentioned earlier, we have 6 development contracts on it right now. I would expect in terms of when it would start to impact the company, you're going to be looking at 2019, 2020, and then certainly beyond. We expect to not only use it to help reinforce our current portfolio of ceiling business, but also allows us to, we think, gain market share in a big way around the world. So we're excited about that. In addition to the ceiling business, we have announced a similar new technology. I won't get into the details, but for our fuel and brake business, we have a Magloy tube technology that is a very high-performing product that allows us to meet or exceed our customers' expectations with that. And then with our FTS hose business, a similar material science that we have with Fortrex, in that it's going to reduce weight, improve performance, and all things that our customers are really happy with. And as I mentioned earlier, when you walk in with new technology that can help customers achieve their objectives, that's a much better discussion around winning business and winning business profitably, and that's what we're seeing. So that doesn't mean we don't have to be competitive. We do, and we're very focused on making sure that not only are our plants world-class, but we also have technology that nobody else has, and those would be two good combinations going forward. So think about that towards the end of the decade having more of a financial impact, but it also is helping us with relationships and building the brand image that we're trying to build around innovation with our customers.
Switching gears, second question, M&A. You've proven yourself to be very good operators. So how do we think about M&A? It seems like you could choose from any number of different companies, and you could either choose fixer-uppers, you could choose customers, penetration rates, you could choose regional penetration rates, new products, and so on and so forth. So how do we think about, you know, as you're kind of looking at the M&A market, what are you looking for?
Yeah, I think just to keep in mind, we talk about what we've done the last 3 years. We've actually done 9 transactions in the past 3 years. So we've gotten rid of some things. We've bought some things to help us, number one, get focused on what we want to do going forward, which is the reason we have 4 product groups today. So we look for technology. We look for geography. We look for customer opportunities if they have issues with any of the suppliers they have. Those would be a few things that guide us. Certainly, when we think about additional activity going forward, I can assure you that we do have long lists, and we spend an awful lot of time looking at those opportunities. And if we feel, from the standpoint of geography, technology, or customer, that one of those makes sense, then we would go forward and try to make that happen. I would tell you that the prices associated with some of the folks that are out there in this day and age have been a little bit beyond what we think would have been fair, so we've passed on a few as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and another solid quarter.
Thank you.
It appears that there are no more questions. I would now like to turn the call back over to Roger Hendrickson.
Okay, thanks again, everyone, for joining our call. We appreciate your continued interest, and we'll look forward to further engagement as the next days and weeks come forward. Please feel free to give a call if you have any further questions outstanding. Thank you. You may now disconnect.